the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program. Friends and enemies, welcome to a very special Wednesday noon episode where we spend our lunch break talking to someone who's important in the Bitcoin space here on the CBP Media Network. It isn't me or Len, though. It's good to see you, buddy. Last time I did a show, you weren't in that other panel. What's going on?
Yeah, it's been a while since I've been on here. It's been good. Yeah. How are things with you? You've been holding down the fort pretty good? Or
well, I mean, I held down the fort for like an hour and a half with Gandalf. He was a great co-host. But today we got Jaron, he will tell me how to say his name, Melrude, who has done quite a bit of work, public-facing work on mining, on energy, and he's got an interesting background. We want to talk to him because I think, Len, you and me barely disagree on anything, but I think maybe we disagree on how miners should be running their operation as far as like the balance sheet strategy, as far as energy production and procurement. So let's see. Maybe we can settle some debates today and go from there. See if we need to find new co-hosts for each other. But before we get started with John, let's talk about our two sponsors. We got two great sponsors. One is ShakeBait, best place for Canadians to buy and hopefully not sell, even at these depressed prices, Bitcoin. Many things going on there. They just added ShakePay Earn. So if you have a little bit of CAD in your ShakePay account, they'll pay you in Bitcoin. I got my interest payment yesterday, the day before, I think, which is great. So that's not a bad way to add to your stack. They have Shaking Sats, of course, where you wake up and shake your phone. If you signed up with our promo code, Charlie Beta Peter, CBP, up to 1,000 sats a day there as well. They have the Shake Paid promotion ongoing, continuing to just give people any purchase they make on their CAD card in Bitcoin, which is great. They have Shake Squads, where you and a few friends get together, and every time you buy something on your CAD card, you get 42 sats for your team. Some of the totals on that are nuts. Shake Paid posts the Shake Squad totals during the week, and there's probably something I'm missing. What am I missing there?
Shake Earn.
Yeah, Shake, sure. I did Shake Earn, but they got a lot of stuff going on.
So we got Shake Pay Visa card, yeah, Shake Squads, yeah. Shaking for
Sats. The Sats back card is what I missed. 2% on your first 5,000 spent off your CAD balance, 1% after that. Tons of stuff going on. Give them a shot. Use our promo code.
Shake Pay just has a laundry list of things that they have going on, and
that's too much. I know. I was just about to say, we got to start figuring out how to cut that down. Anyway, who's our other sponsor?
Yeah, well, of course, it's Ledin, and open up an account with Ledin and earn some interest on your BTC or USDC. Use our promo code below, pump 150,000 sats or 75 USDC on their platform. Keep it on there for 15 consecutive days, and Ledin will give you 10 USDC. If you also have a lot of BTC, you don't want to sell it, who does at this price? You can just simply borrow against it, use the BTC's collateral, and Ledin is there to help you out with a 50% loan to value. And if you are the eternal optimist, you think the price of Bitcoin is going up, well, you could do the B2X option where you could double up your Bitcoin stack. And if you time it right, and if you do it properly, well, you'll have some more Bitcoin at the end. Don't leave it in, pull it out when you're done. And the last thing to have is the Bitcoin-backed mortgages, industry first, but not available everywhere. So check their website to see where they're offering that if you're interested in the Bitcoin-backed mortgages.
Outstanding job. Good job by me. Good job by you. Let's bring in Jaron. He's in parts unknown. We don't know where he is. He's in a different time zone for sure. Why don't we start with some introductions here? We know who you are. We're semi-familiar with your work, but I think a lot of our listeners haven't really dove deep into what you got going on. So tell us a bit about who you are, what you do, and you also have kind of an interesting how you got into Bitcoin story. So I'd love to hear that too.
Yeah, so first of all, thanks for having me. Really good to be here and talk to you. So I was always interested in financial markets and investments. I studied first a bachelor in business administration. I was really interested in how you value different companies, all that stuff. And then when it came to the master level, I went to study energy management. I wasn't really interested in energy, but I figured that if I studied that, I could go to exchange to Russia. But that exchange was canceled later. But anyways, so I was there stuck in this energy management, which I was not really that interested in. And at that time, I had become really, really obsessed with Bitcoin. And I had to write my master thesis, and I was not looking forward to it. I was too busy studying Bitcoin full time. So I was thinking, okay, Bitcoin mining uses energy. I study energy management. So why don't I write my master's thesis about Bitcoin mining? And I did. I wrote about how Bitcoin miners can stabilize the energy grid. So, and then I started to be interested in energy because of Bitcoin mining. Because I became really obsessed with Bitcoin mining, and I got like really introduced to the rest of the energy markets. Really, really fascinating. And I decided I have to get a job in Bitcoin. I can't work in a normal job. So I got my first job in a company called Arcane Research, which is a crypto research company based in Norway. I mostly focused on the Bitcoin mining while I worked there, but also on the general crypto markets. I wanted to focus on Bitcoin mining 100% of my time. So therefore, I recently quit Arcane and started working in Luxor, which is a mining technology company. It has a mining pool and several other services for miners. So now I work there as a research analyst covering Bitcoin mining, mostly public Bitcoin miners. And so my background is mostly from investments and the energy side.
Now, I just want to touch upon your academic background here. And I want to know what your thoughts are. What role does Bitcoin miners play with energy generators?
So Bitcoin mining is just a way for energy generators to get rid of excess energy. You know, before you, there's excess and stranded energy everywhere in the world, or a lot of places in the world. And before Bitcoin, these generators who had excess energy and that couldn't be transported to other energy markets were not able to monetize this energy, and it was just wasted in this local area. With Bitcoin, you can actually sell energy into a global market of energy. And my grandfather, he was the CEO of a large power generator for like 25 years, and he has always been skeptical to Bitcoin. He's like a little bit afraid of it. But when I talked to him about how Bitcoin mining uses energy, then he became really, really interested in it. And he really understood that from his power background, that his biggest problem as a power generator was, how do we get rid of this excess energy? Because in Northern Norway, where I'm from, we have so much excess hydropower. And I think if my grandfather was younger and still operated this company, he would look into Bitcoin mining to get rid of this excess energy.
That's hilarious. So I think one thing I want to talk about before we dive into a lot of stuff, and we got a lot of stuff we want to pick your brain on. You've said now a few times, excess energy. Now, I want you to paint a picture for the noobs, okay? When people say excess energy, what do they mean by that? Why is it so important that this is dealt with by power producers?
If you had perfect transmission capacity in the whole world, let's say that the whole world was connected with like perfect transmission capacity, then the energy price would be exactly the same in the whole world. But that's not the case. Some places the energy is really expensive, like in Germany, and some places it's extremely cheap, like in Northern Norway. And the reason is this lack of transmission capacity. So excess energy is energy that you sell for a very, very cheap price. It's energy that has no local demand, and you will have to sell it for a very, very low price. And this price is not necessarily enough to cover the capital expenditures of the power plant. For example, some wind producers, if they only can sell energy for a very, very low price, this price might not be enough to pay down the loan of this wind that was required to build this wind power plant. So that's really excess energy. It's just energy which is extremely, extremely cheap, and it makes, like in Northern Norway, you know, Norway is a very, very wealthy country, but we still have the cheapest energy in the world. And that's not really natural. Like, I'm not complaining that we have so cheap energy. I'm just saying that the reason why it's cheap is because we have too much energy, and that's excess energy. That's why we need Bitcoin miners.
It's an opportunity for a lot of home mining operations to start about, and there seems to be a renaissance for this. I'm not sure if you're aware, but like I'm looking at Twitter, and a lot of more people are using S9s for space heaters to heat their homes and heat their rooms. And it's a good way to generate Bitcoin at the same time for heating your homes. I want to know your thoughts about home Bitcoin mining. Is this something that's going to be more prevalent moving forward, or is just maybe just a fad right now?
I think exactly. If you use the home, the heat from the home mining, then of course it's a no-brainer to mine Bitcoin at home, as long as you're interested in Bitcoin mining. I have two S9s myself. I don't currently run them, but I will when I just need to prioritize it. But yeah, and I know several people who have like cheap miners, S9s, that they use primarily for heating purposes. Like one guy I know in Norway, his parents have a cabin up in the mountain where it gets really cold, and he just put one or two S9s there, which is heating the cabin. So it's like always 15 to 20 degrees inside his cabin, even in the winter, which is his parents appreciate when they come up there in the when it's cold. So yeah, I believe. To mine Bitcoin right now, you have to have a very low power price. It has to be the break-even price now for the S19 is like 10 cents per kilowatt hour. And that's quite low. In Northern Norway, the average price this year has been 1.5 cents per kilowatt hour, wow, which is extremely low. So in order to do home mining, you need to have access to that extremely cheap energy. I wouldn't do home mining in, let's say, Germany, but if you, I would definitely do it in countries like Norway and potentially some regions of Canada where you have access to very cheap energy. Especially if you reuse the heat, then it's a no-brainer.
I've been trying to convince a friend of a friend to heat their cottage in the winter with an S9. I haven't been successful yet, but pretty soon I'm just gonna do it myself and not tell them.
Yeah.
And do it yourself. See how it goes. Yeah,
if you have the keys, Joey will take care of it.
Yeah, thanks. Okay, so you mentioned a few things there that it kind of lead me to a question that we wanted to ask you anyway. You do a lot of work on public Bitcoin miners. You have done a lot of work on public Bitcoin miners. There's a lot that goes into deciding whether to invest in a Bitcoin miner. I think a lot of unsophisticated investors probably look at two things, would be my guess. One is NAV compared to like the balance sheet holdings of the company. And the other would be, is the Bitcoin price going up or down? And there's nothing wrong with that strategy. That strategy so far, especially during bull markets, has worked wonderfully. It's been swimmingly good if you employed that strategy. But I know that there's other elements to how you view what the Bitcoin miner equity price should be for a retail investor. Now, I've heard you say that it's the sort of price of ASICs. What is the cost of an ASIC? What is the current hash rate on the network, and what kind of hash can the miner provide? The Bitcoin price, of course, and also the energy price. Now, I kind of want you to go into some detail here on how you view the public Bitcoin mining scene at the moment, given that there's been some significant stories in the last few days about companies like Core Scientific going from the largest sort of hash provider on the planet to nothing. That, you know, presumably they're going to go bankrupt and have to sell their equipment. So how do you view the current state of affairs in public industrial mining? Is this something that you're concerned about as far as network security? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, regarding our question about network security, I'm not concerned at all. If these miners go bankrupt, the hash rate will just emerge somewhere else. So for Bitcoin, it's no problem. The problem is, of course, for the people who bought these stocks. Like the average Bitcoin mining stock is down like 90% from their all-time high. So a lot of people have lost a lot of money, me included here. And I think this bear market has showed us that for Bitcoin mining stocks or public Bitcoin miners, the most important thing to survive the bear market is just to have a strong balance sheet with little debt and good liquidity. Because that's Core Scientific's problem right now, is that they have a very, very weak balance sheet. They have a very, very high debt compared to their equity. And also they're running out of liquidity. But Core Scientific is still a very good operational company. They have increased their hash rate really, really fast this year from 6 exahash in the beginning of the year to like 13 now. So they have been probably the best operator out there with regards to just plugging in machines and keeping them running. But their problem is, as I say, having a good company that operates well doesn't mean anything if you have too much debt. That's really the problem. And they also took too much risk regarding their Bitcoin holdings, because the Core Scientific's liquidity position looked pretty good this spring. They had like $400-500 million of combined Bitcoin holdings and cash, but $350 million of that was Bitcoin. And then when the Bitcoin price went from 40K in May to like 20K in June, of course their liquidity halved. And I think they of course hadn't anticipated this Bitcoin price drop. So they hadn't really planned for it in their budgets with regards to the upcoming debt payments. They had not budgeted with a Bitcoin price of 20K. And that because of when the Bitcoin price fell so much, they realized that we need to sell as much Bitcoin as possible. And they just sold everything throughout the summer. And now they have 24 Bitcoin left. So, and they had like 9,000 at the peak. So they were a really big hodler. They just took too much risk with their balance sheet, too much leverage, too little liquidity, and their liquidity was all in Bitcoin, which went right in the toilet. So it's not surprising that they're struggling right now. And you have some other public miners who also have quite high debt levels. So right now, what I do to look at who will survive, who will not survive, right now, it's only thing that matters is to have a strong balance sheet. And of course, low cost of production. That's the only thing that matters. Before this bear market, I was actually not, I was quite bearish on Marathon because they're not a strong operator, but at least they have a strong balance sheet. And they will be able to, I think they will be able to survive this bear market quite well just because of their balance sheet. So in a bear market, it's the balance sheet that counts, which is the most important.
Talk to me a bit about holding Bitcoin on the balance sheet of publicly traded companies. This is not to say that you have to mine and keep all your Bitcoin exclusively. There are companies like Bitfarms who went out of their way to trade cash for Bitcoin in the bull market near the top last year, earlier this year. Do you view, and I don't want you, you don't have to paint, you know, a negative picture of a company. You can if you want, of course, but you don't have to. Do you view this sort of Bitcoin on the balance sheet strategy generally as a good strategy? On this show, I happen to think it's not a good strategy for a number of reasons. Len, I think, is a little softer on that position. And I'm curious what you think. You've done a lot of research. And, you know, are the Twitter likes and retweets worth hodling everything that you mine, or should they be doing something else on with their balance sheet strategy?
Yeah, so let's go a couple of years back and look at why this public miners first went public. Marathon, for example, it emerged by the need of a publicly listed Bitcoin investment vehicle. Because as you know, there are not that many ways for investors to get exposure to Bitcoin other than just buying Bitcoin itself. So Marathon wanted there was not really a focused mining company. That's why their name is Marathon Digital Assets. They wanted to just hodl Bitcoin and get as many Bitcoin as possible. And they do this through by mining, because that's the easiest way to just get a lot of Bitcoin. So These companies, they merged by the need of investors to get exposure to Bitcoin. That's part of the reason why they hold so much Bitcoin, because their investors wanted them to just hodl as many Bitcoin as possible. And it seemed like in 2021 and beginning of 2022, it seemed like there was a kind of a competition between these companies in not selling Bitcoin. They didn't want to sell any Bitcoin, especially companies like Marathon and the Hut 8. I think they are the two only ones who haven't yet sold any Bitcoin. So this strategy has really been pushed by shareholders. And I don't really think this hodl at any cost strategy is a good strategy. But I'm not necessarily saying that they should sell all the Bitcoin either. I think you have to always make a decision, like continuously, about your balance sheet. Sometimes it might be good to hold Bitcoin. Sometimes it might be better to sell it. That's what is CleanSpark's strategy. They are not a pure hodler, but they are not a pure seller either. And you have companies like Aris Energy who just always liquidates their Bitcoin every day. But I still think that liquidating Bitcoin every day is better than the 100% hodl strategy. Because hodling Bitcoin is very risky, as this bear market has shown. And it might go against you. So we have seen that with Core Scientific now. That's part of the reason why they're failing, because there was 100% hodling Bitcoin. But at the same time, a mining company wants to have some liquidity in the pocket, and having that much cash in its liquidity will not be accepted by shareholders. Like, shareholders will never accept that a Bitcoin mining company has like 500 million just lying there in case of a bear market emerging. Then shareholders will be like, hey, why are you not using this to expand? Why are you at least not using this to buy Bitcoin? So it will be impossible to be a 100% Bitcoin seller and build up a strong liquidity position in cash. That's not possible for a public miner. So the only way for them to build up liquidity is actually to hodl Bitcoin. But at the same time, miners can enter various derivatives positions, and they can also raise capital during when they need. You will, for example, never see an oil company hodl oil. They're not going like, oh, we hodl all our oil production this month. We are so you should invest in our oil company.
They have tankers full of oil, which is waiting to be released to market.
Yeah. So in the oil and gas industry and other commodity industries, they are really trying to reduce the risk as much as possible. They're trying to reduce their exposure to the commodity which they're producing. What they do is they make a spread on the production cost and the cost of the commodity. And that's what I think is the future of Bitcoin mining as well. I think the future of Bitcoin mining is not hodling Bitcoin. I think they will be much more sophisticated in their treasury strategies. And the best strategy, I think, will not be hodling 100%.
So some of the strategies moving forward, I'm just wondering what sort of challenges are going to be presented to them as well. I'm talking about the Bitcoin miners, because looking at some of the ones that we've seen, they might be falling. Core Scientific, Argo, Luxfolio, and just recently Aris Energy. A lot of bad news came out for all four of those companies. So I'm wondering if investors are starting to lose confidence in Bitcoin mining companies, especially if you see Core Scientific, the largest publicly traded Bitcoin miner by hash rate, potentially capitulate. This is pretty bad news. Also, on the same side of things, is there going to be some real problems with raising debt? Is there going to be less, are lenders less likely to issue debt to Bitcoin miners after watching all this play out in front of them? I think it's going to be more costly for Bitcoin miners just to raise money. So I'm wondering, what are your thoughts with the challenges moving forward with publicly traded Bitcoin miners?
Yeah, I 100% agree with you that if Core Scientific goes bankrupt, it can have very bad implications for the rest of the industry, because it will lead to really deteriorating trust in the industry. The trust in the industry is already not that good, as these companies have decreased like 90% from their all-time highs. Investors are already fleeing them, and they had problems raising equity and debt already before news broke out that Core is in this bad position. So if Core goes bankrupt, it might lead to the share prices of other public miners also plummet, especially those with high debt relative to their equity, because investors will want to flee these companies. And if the share prices of other public miners fall even more, then it will be much harder for these companies to raise debt and or equity, because if the share prices fall even more, the debt to equity ratios will be really high, and the companies will not be able to raise that much debt, and they can't raise that much equity without diluting their shareholders. So that might lead to a domino effect in the industry, where a lot of miners who have balance sheet positions might actually go bankrupt, is what I fear. So therefore, I'm hoping that Core Scientific not go bankrupt. I'm hoping that they can do some restructuring of the company where the debt holders convert their debt into equity, and they can let the company live.
One thing, you know, we've talked quite a bit about here is risk mitigation. And we've had a number of CEOs on, including CleanSpark and including Iris Energy, who have talked to us about the importance of vertically integrating energy, even if they're not doing it, even if not everyone in the industry is doing it yet. It seems to me like that's the direction this is going to go. Do you have a view on that, Jaron? And if you do, I'd be curious about what you think the future looks like for energy companies who want to get into mining. Are they going to be a more dominant player just because they have more resources available, or is it going to be too risky for them to kind of branch out into Bitcoin mining? And you're going to see the miners instead become, you know, players in the energy markets. I'm always wondering about how this is going to shape up, because I hear stories about Exxon, for example, running these sort of small scale mining pilots all over the place. And there's always whispers on Bitcoin Twitter that all three of us have seen, and everyone listening and watching has seen, about this other company or this country is having some Bitcoin mining talk and talking to their energy producers. How do you view that? How do you view vertical integration in mining? And do you think that the miners have the, you know, you talked a little bit about who's a good operator, who's not a good operator. Are the operators in the space competent enough to get into that vertical and make it work in their mining operation or not?
Yeah, I believe that vertical integration is the future of mining. And because that's how you lower your costs, and that's how you can take control over your as much of your supply chain as possible. We see, for example, Marathon now, this year they have had so many problems because they rely on hosting providers that haven't followed their deadlines. That's why Marathon right now has only an operating hash rate of, I think it's 7 exahash, while they last year they promised multiples of that in this time of the year. So they haven't been that good at operating, exactly because they rely on too many unforeseen or too many things they can't control in their hosting providers. So yeah, I believe vertical integration is the future. And I believe that this vertical integration will come from the energy side. I think right now the energy companies view mining as risky. You know, Bitcoin is new. These energy companies are extremely big, have institutional shareholders that maybe are a little bit afraid of Bitcoin and mining. But I think there, in a few years, when Bitcoin becomes a bigger part of society, I think they will go into Bitcoin mining. So right now, mining is just it's just like an arbitrage on energy companies not willing to do it themselves. because energy companies, of course, they can provide cheaper energy than miners buying energy. Like if I own a power plant, I can just give this energy to myself. I already have all the energy infrastructure needed. I have experience in power. And mining is not that difficult. Like, and if some guys who started mining in their basement 3 years ago can build a huge mining company, then I'm sure and big energy company, publicly listed multinational company can also do it. I don't think it will be a problem at all. So the only thing holding them back now is, as I said, is the like regulatory aspect. But I think that will improve in the future. And we see also the energy companies might also buy some miners. I think a company like Crusoe Energy, for example, they are a perfect candidate for being bought by, let's say, ExxonMobil in the future. So we will see how that plays out.
Crusoe is doing really good work in the Middle East, and they're gaining a lot of experience over there. So yeah, potentially could be bought up by one of the big energy players. And I'm looking at the hash rate of Bitcoin right now, and every week it's reaching a new all-time high. And it's for the last month or two, it's just gone gangbusters. And I don't know what's happening here, because I look at publicly traded Bitcoin miners, and I know they may represent maybe a quarter to a third of the overall hash rate from last I understand. So in essence, they're just reorganizing the deck chairs, because Argo sold off their mining equipment to CleanSpark and so forth. They're not really adding, they're just moving equipment around. So who's adding equipment to the network to increase the hash rate so much? I'm wondering, could it be one of these oil producers, maybe using flared gas or something else? Because there's got to be somebody plugging in equipment, and who is it?
Yeah, there's quite a lot of theories around this. I can go through some of them. One theory is that Ethereum miners who can't mine Ethereum are redeploying their data centers to Bitcoin mining, because there are more than enough Bitcoin mining machines just lying out there to increase the hash rate. Like, I don't know how many exahashes worth of machines are just sitting there without being used. Probably it could be like 400 exahash on the network right now, which are unplugged. So ETH miners could definitely repurpose their data centers and just put in ASICs and mine Bitcoin. I think that's the most likely scenario. Also, a lot of miners in America and Canada are getting the new Antminer XP, which is extremely energy efficient and strong miner. So that also plays in, and we see that public miners have increased their hash rate really much faster the last month than they have been used to before. But the most interesting theory, which some people might call a conspiracy theory, is that the Russians are mining with flared natural gas, because Russia is have much more natural gas now than they had before due to this pipeline explosion. So with all this stranded gas in Russia, what should they do with it? Well, they can mine Bitcoin, and Russia has the opportunity to import machines from Russia, from China. In China, there is a lot of machines just sitting there since the mining ban. And why if I was a Russian guy controlling natural gas, I would definitely just import some machines from Russia. Why not? And I was also talking to a miner from Kazakhstan the other day, and I asked him about this, and he because he also mines in Russia, and he said that he is sure that this is the reason why the hash rate is increasing.
Wow.
So it's quite interesting.
I noticed you never said Sheik Roberto there. He's doing a lot of max bidding and mining. You know Sheik Roberto on Twitter? You seen that guy?
Sheik Roberto?
No. But Joey, he's only responsible for a couple of exahash. It's only like it's a portion of 1% of the overall network.
It's this guy that drives around with a laptop trying to like plug in at Starbucks to mine Bitcoin, asking for the Wi-Fi password and stuff. It's a funny meme if you ever get a chance to watch it. But I want to talk about the difficulty and the relationship that difficulty has to price. And I don't have a view on this. I don't know enough about the mining ecosystem and all the different moving parts, but I suspect that you do. And I want to know what your view is on the relationship between difficulty and price. And, you know, I don't want you to make a price prediction or call a bottom or anything like that. But, you know, I do see a lot of people on Twitter who presumably have some view on this, talking about how the hash rate is showing us that the bottom is close, or the bottom is, you know, sort of in the proximity of where we are now. What is your view on difficulty and price, that relationship that those two things have? And how should Bitcoin investors, hodlers, look at that relationship?
I don't pay attention to any of these on-chain analysis things. I don't know. I don't really believe in it, to be honest. I don't think price has anything, or hash rate, no, I mean difficulty has anything to do with price. Of course, if the Bitcoin price increases, then the hash rate will increase, which will lead the difficulty to increase. So the hash rate and the difficulty is a lagging indicator of the Bitcoin price, not the opposite. And when it comes to predicting the Bitcoin price, I don't really do that, but I still think it's a good opportunity to buy Bitcoin right now. Of course, when everyone should buy when everyone are so depressed as now. Like it's just like I think it was Warren Buffett who said, "Be greedy when others are fearful, and fearful when others are greedy," and that's completely true. So I'm just buying a little bit every day. That's how you, the only way to operate in this market. I think like predicting if the Bitcoin price is going to be $15,000 or $30,000 in 1 month, it's almost impossible.
Do you think that there is a price where you will see hash rate decline meaningfully? Because it seems to me, like Len mentioned, and you guys were talking about already, the hash rate just keeps going up. So is there a price where you think you're likely to see a significant decline in hash rate, or like is the asset past that? Like because I would expect, my uneducated guess, my uneducated view is that I would expect, like you mentioned, price to tell me that hash rate is going to decrease at some point. But we've seen the opposite. So is there a price you think that changes, or is that done now?
Yeah. So hash rate index, which is the like data part of Luxor where I work. They published, I was not part of this research, but they published a paper recently which shows the relationship with the exactly what you're talking about, how the Bitcoin price, or how the hash price, the value of hash rate, can affect the hash rate. So, and it found, I think it was a resistance at $18,000 per Bitcoin. In if Bitcoin drops to $18,000, then a lot of hash rate will go offline, because that will lead to a significant part of the mining network being underwater, and they will turn off their machines, which will lead mining to become a little bit more profitable again. So yeah, there's definitely a relationship there.
It's the obtaining the cheapest and reliable energy, but also in a jurisdiction that's going to be favorable to Bitcoin mining, which leads me to my next question, in that the majority of Bitcoin mining operations publicly traded, they're located in North America. And I'm wondering if this is a good or a bad thing, because it seems to be centralized in a very small area of the globe. And by doing so, you're setting yourself up for a potential, if there's a ban down the road by governments, it could really cause a problem with publicly traded Bitcoin miners. So in your eyes, do you think it's a good thing for the miners to be located in North America, given the environment as it is? Or should they be looking to expand globally to try to lessen the impact? Should there be not so pleasing rules coming down from the government?
Yeah, I understand. First of all, I really understand why they're located in the US and Canada, because that's where you have the strong capital markets, which incentivize them to be located there. And they have like their territory there where they operate, and they don't necessarily want to go outside of that territory. But we see some miners like Bitfarms, for example, they are expanding into South America, and I think that's a really good strategy. They're expanding into Paraguay and Argentina. And I really believe the future of Bitcoin mining is going to be in Latin America, for example. So I'm really, really bullish on that geographical diversification. And also, we see also the most of public miners in the US and Canada, they diversify into different states. So for example, Core Scientific, they have mining operations, I think, in four or five different states. So if one state don't like them, at least they have four other states they can operate in. But the bottom line is that operating in one area, one geographic area under one jurisdiction is risky, because we see how important the legal aspect, the political aspect of Bitcoin mining is, how it can affect Bitcoin mining. It's a significant political risk in the Bitcoin mining industry. It's the biggest risk there is, actually. So geographic diversification is absolutely key. If I had a mining operation myself, I would try to get it as diversified as possible.
So you touched upon Bitfarms entering into South American markets, and I know that they're sending their older equipment down there because they're getting access to really cheap energy in Paraguay and Argentina. And do you think there's any risk involved with getting into those countries? Because I know that the IMF and the Argentina, they told Argentina they shouldn't be offering Bitcoin services from their bank. So IMF obviously is not very favorable to Bitcoin. So I'm wondering, moving forward, if there's going to be even potential that there may be nationalizing anything that potentially is set up over there. So do you think that there's any fear of setting up operations in South America? Is this some of the things that we should be looking at, or is this something that maybe I'm just too fearful and I'm just looking at the glass half full?
No, I think it's an important risk to keep in mind, the political risk. Just because the government in Paraguay, for example, claims that they like Bitcoin mining and they are open to Bitcoin mining, doesn't mean that they can't do stupid things like nationalizing the industry or things like that. That's a very important risk factor. We see in some countries like let's say Kazakhstan, for example, there the government was just completely destroying the mining industry. In Venezuela, they a lot of people mine Bitcoin there at home, and then the government just confiscated their miners. Like Paraguay, Argentina are not as extreme examples as Venezuela, of course, but you never know what can happen. But that's why it's wise to have operations spread out between different jurisdictions. And I think it's wise of Bitfarms to not focus entirely on Argentina or Paraguay, but to go into both of them at the same time. I think that's very wise of them.
So I have one more big question here. And then actually I have two more questions. I know I just said I had one, but I have two. One is, you know, we talked about the sort of ways to survive the bear market, the balance sheet health, things of that nature. Do you have a view on what the optimal bull market strategy is for a publicly traded mining company? It seems to me that to get into the position these guys are in bear markets, they had to mismanage all through these giant price rips. And, I'm curious, what do you think is the strategy they should have been employing during that run up to 69,000 and the sort of, you know, the time around that when the Bitcoin price was sky high?
The ultimate strategy, if you want to build a long-term Bitcoin mining company during the bull market, is to use the bull market as an opportunity to get your company ready for the bear market, because the bear market will come one day, and if you're not ready for that, you will be destroyed. So the company should think very, very long term, and I think some of these companies were better than that than others. But I can understand why they were thinking short term and just loading up on debt, and that's because that's what the market rewarded them for. During the bull market, it was really, really easy to raise equity. So a lot of these companies just raised as much equity as possible, and they have used this equity to fund these extreme expansion plans, like Marathon to 23 exahash as they plan, Core Scientific up to 17, Riot, I think, are going to have like 13 exahash by 2023 or by mid-2023. So they overexpanded, but they did this because the market were willing to give them cheap capital to overexpand. So I completely understand why they did this. But I think they should have focused more on just trying to lower their cost as much as possible, trying to make their operations as efficient as possible, using the cheap capital to pay down debt so that you have a very, very strong balance sheet when the bear market comes, because mining is an extremely volatile industry and you should have minimal amounts of debt in mining. I think your debt to equity ratio should be below 0.2 or 0.3. It should be very, very low. You should almost not have any debt. I think so.
That's I don't know of any public companies. I mean, there's probably a few, but I'm not a big looker of balance sheets and things of that nature, but maybe I should start. I guess, Jaron, the last question is, you know, we talked about the miners. Let's talk about investors. What's the lesson they should take away from the last 6 months? A lot of people in a lot of pain, including you, as you mentioned, including us, as we've talked about many times. What is the lesson to take away for the average, you know, the stonk watcher? What should they be doing? What should they be thinking about?
I can say what I've learned during this bear market, because this has been my first bear market for Bitcoin mining stocks. And my what I've learned is that during the bear market, the only thing that counts is to have a strong balance sheet. So you should start looking at mining companies with a low debt to equity ratio, very low debt. Basically, mining companies that are able to survive the bear market. Because if you're able to survive the bear market, then things are going to get better in the bull market. And the other thing is, you need a company which is good operationally. You need to have a very, very low cost of production, and your energy cost of the miner should ideally be long term fixed. That's what's I've killed a lot of these miners now. It's they were paying spot energy, and when the energy prices soared, then they almost not have any margin. So what I'm thinking, in the future, miners will need to reduce their risk as much as possible, which implies fixing their energy prices. So, but for most people, I actually would advise to not invest in these stocks, because there, as this bear market has shown, that it's so volatile, and many of these companies have not really been that professional. Like, they also been paying out extreme amount of executive compensation to their teams, and it seemed like some of them have been trying to do is just to milk as much value out of the companies as possible. And so you should also look at if you're going to invest in miners, you should also look at who are spending the least on compensation and on administration. That's really important, because if you look at these miners' revenue statements during 2021, which was the best year ever in Bitcoin mining, I don't know if it ever will be such a good year, such a profitable year. But if you look at their revenue statement, you would expect that they made such huge profits. But they actually didn't. Most of them went like zero. and that's in the best year ever for Bitcoin mining. And that's because they were just using this money they made for executive compensation and things like that. So, yeah. But I really hope the industry will be more professional coming forward. And maybe the less professional operators will learn the hard lesson now.
It's time for you to set up operations in northern Norway. It's politically stable, friendly people, cheap energy. It seems like a great opportunity to set something up over there. And you could be an executive and reap the rewards of getting the high salary there. So there's an opportunity there. Just take advantage of it while you can.
Yeah, I can just explain a little bit. The political risk in northern Norway is actually not existent. The government here don't like Bitcoin, or especially not mining. They've been trying to ban Bitcoin mining here. They've been trying to increase the power tax specifically for Bitcoin miners, which they were unable to. But now they are increasing the power tax for all data centers. So they're willing to throw all data centers under the bus just to get rid of the miners, which just shows how much they hate the miners here. But you can still operate here. You just need to find a local municipality who actually want you there. But the federal government hates it.
I have no idea about that. Imagine that, Len. Like, they just throw everyone under the bus.
You got to grease some palms. That's the way to do things.
It's just on Bitcoin. Bitcoin is like this thing that drives people crazy. Either drives it crazy in the way that it drove Jaren crazy, going from, you know, his original post-secondary plans to writing about Bitcoin mining full time and coming on shows like ours. It drives us crazy to show up and do a podcast when I should be eating my lunch. And the people in the chat, it drives crazy too. It could be doing something else instead of just bothering me on a Thursday afternoon. Anyway, Jaren, you've been a great guest. Tell people where they can find what you're doing, some work you've done. The floor is all yours, man.
Yeah. So thank you for having me. It was a great conversation. Really good. So you can find me at Twitter, Jay Mellerud. That's J-M-E-L-L-E-R-U-D. It's an ancient Norwegian Viking name, so it might be hard for you Canadians to find me on Twitter. And you can also go to hashrateindex.com and look at the blog there. I write a lot of articles on Bitcoin mining, especially Bitcoin mining stocks.
Outstanding. Jaren Mellerud, ancient Viking name. Writing about the newest technology on the planet. Thank you, sir. Thanks for watching and listening, everybody. We'll see you soon.
Thank you.
Way to go, buddy. Way to go.